It's too late, Jared. We're recording. You can do it, Jared. I know you can do it. All right, so I will start off. That movie was fucking intense. Throughout the whole movie, usually I find war movies fun, even like a movie like Saving Private Ryan, because there's a lot of action and fighting. This movie, though, I'm like, yeah, no. War's not fun. I already knew war wasn't fun to begin with, and I know it's just the movies, and movies seem to glorify it. I think, as speaking as someone who's never been in war and don't want, I don't want to be in war.
I have a suggestion.
Go ahead, Jared.
Why don't you tell your podcasters what we're talking about?
I'm getting into that. Well, they'll know when they see Dunkirk written on it. So yeah,
Dunkirk.
We're reviewing Dunkirk.
All right.
Anyway, I hope I'm never in war. I don't want to be in war. No way. But if I am, I think that's what it's probably like. It was so nerve-wracking. It was so intense. My nerves were racked. How are your nerves, Jared?
My nerves are racked. You're too much.
Go ahead. Hurry up. You're wasting valuable time.
It was very well done. There was nothing cliche about it, which I love.
No.
I love when they could do that, and it doesn't happen too often.
Nope.
So many times movies are trying to like hit their trope values, the things that get their audience to react, even though it's a cheap reaction.
Yes.
It's like, all right, here's this trope, or here's that. Here's the hero. The hero is a sacrifice.
Yes.
Now, they had all of that in there, but it was very real. It really was like you were reading a diary.
Right, but it's not like, a guy gets shot and he's like, go on without me, or we have to do this for Bobby.
Right,
exactly. Do it for Bobby, and then he dies.
There was none of that. It really, it watched like a diary read.
Oh.
It was very well done in that the storylines, they were chaotic in a way.
Ooh.
That was very structured, but it was done very purposely.
Yes.
It fed into the idea of the film that you don't know, you had no control over what's going on. You had no control over what was happening next. It was just that you have the will to kind of push on and somehow end up in a place where you weren't blown up, drowned, or burnt alive. So it was very...
Now, the way it was
very,
told...
ethereally
done. It was non-linear, though. So there were moments where it's like, okay, this is now at night, but then it flashes in the day. And so it was kind of like, I think of Memento, kind of.
Yes.
You know, it's that non-linear storytelling.
And they kind of set that up a little bit in the beginning. I'm not totally sure I understood exactly what they meant, because they said day...
Yes.
Day one, day two, day three,
well, it
and then
said,
they gave an hour. Now,
yes.
Were those three different timelines?
Okay, so the first one, I believe, we just saw the movie, so this is going through memory. The first one was The Mole. Now, I believe The Mole is like the docks or something. So that was like one week or something, and then the sea was 1 hour, and then there was another one that was a different time, so I think maybe it was...
Oh, yeah, one day. So it was one day, hour, 1 week.
Yeah, so they were on the beach for a week while the father and son were on the sea for an hour traveling from England to Dunkirk.
Right.
And then the sea was, I don't know, how long it was.
Right,
so,
and then the plane was in the air for a day, I guess.
Was the plane in the air for a day?
That was the day one.
Yeah.
I guess that's how it worked, right?
I think. So it was non-linear. It wasn't told, like, from point A to point B. It went through different times.
Right. And then they all merged at the end.
Because it showed the resolution. And, like, I knew that if Tom Hardy's character, he was the pilot, if he survived that, the fucking Germans were going to... The Nazis were going to capture him. And I knew that as soon as he burned the plane and he got out and the fucking Nazis got him, I'm like, oh, shit. Oh. So I wonder if...
I like how he's like, I'm just going to land this bitch. Why am I going to shoot? I'm not going to spring out and try and, scramble for my life.
He's accepted.
It was like a dignity thing. I'm going to land this fucking plane.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get out and
burn
the shit out of it.
What was interesting about the dogfight, about the airplane sequence, was that it was so clinical. They were all talking, like the pilots were talking, like it was like, hey, okay, well, let's, you go down the street, you make a left, and then you go by the stop sign, and you make another left. It was kind of like that. There wasn't like, kind of like, go, 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 or move, move.
Right.
It was like, where are you? Where are you? Okay.
Right.
And that was it. It was just very, very calm.
Right. And I mean, I guess I don't know if that, it felt like it would have been more close with what might happen in reality. I wouldn't know because I've never been in war, but they kind of, the characters that kind of persevered are the ones that kind of just moved on after each thing.
Yeah.
So there was no dramatic, I can't believe what happened. There was none of that like Hollywood type, like I'm going to bathe in the loss type of thing.
No.
Kind of like it was just gone.
And they didn't have time.
Stuff would like disappear and the characters would just kind of be like,
yeah,
this is normal now.
Yeah. You know? We're on a boat. Okay. The boat's sinking. We're going to get off the boat. We're going to get picked up by another boat. Okay. Now that boat's being shot down. We're going to be in the water for a bit. Yeah. So it was just, yeah. Yeah, just moving from location to location. Did you know that one of the main characters, one of the guys on the boat that was being shot, who was having an argument with the Frenchman, when they found out the guy was the Frenchman, he's Harry Styles from the band One Direction.
Really?
Yeah, he's in a boy band.
That's weird.
And then he was in a Nolan movie, so I was like, whoa.
That's funny.
But there wasn't that much dialogue in it.
No, there wasn't a lot. It's very simple.
It was told, the score was intense.
It was told with the music.
The whole story was told
with the music.
And the way it was shot, I don't think there was any CGI at all.
Really?
I don't think there was.
That plane.
Oh, maybe the plane. There was a little bit, but I think most shots, like the people were all real people. It wasn't CGI people.
No, that's true.
And the way the shots were set up, it was very epic and old school.
It captured the scale of, of the battle. It captured the scale like in a very good, like a very real way. You bought it. I got confused in the beginning though, completely sidetracked. I couldn't tell any of the Englishmen apart because of the haircuts.
They all look they all have the same haircut.
Is that him and him?
Yes.
Is this a Nolan thing?
Where yes.
Playing with your head and that's him. And he's
it's a clone.
Like, this is what it looked like.
It's the twin brother.
I can't tell any of the English people apart.
Well, they kind of had the same hair color and the same hairstyle.
Yeah. And of course, because they're in war, they're all wearing the same uniform.
Yes.
Yeah, it really looked like the same people. I felt like they were like all talking to each other, but that's like the same person.
There was a jet black hair people, and then every once in a while there was a blonde person, and then there was a Dutch guy who had a beard.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, all right. Some of the characters were hard to tell apart. But I guess that didn't matter because you were just going from place to place, location to location. Kenneth Branagh, I loved his performance because it was so subtle.
Which one was Kenneth Branagh?
He was the leader of the Navy, the guy who stayed at the end.
Really?
Yeah, that's Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, very nice.
So, like, the faces that he made when, like, he thinks he's going to get bombed by boats.
It's
and then it's
real,
it turns out to be people from England. But then he makes the same face where there's a Nazi plane flying over and he's like, oh, but, like, you can see the aggravation, but he still has that intense look, but it's with a very stoic and very calm.
Yeah.
So he was great. I mean, everybody was great in it.
You easily forget you're watching a movie.
It was
like,
just
there was nothing in it that's all right. That's a little cheesy.
It was so intense. It was so intense. Like even like war movies that aren't supposed to be fun, like Saving Private Ryan's not a fun movie. Platoon is not a fun movie, but there are moments in it where you're like, yeah, or whoa, or yeah, come on.
There's some very caricature-y Hollywood moments in the films, and this one didn't.
It didn't stray from the
realism. The realism really was, like, preserved very well.
There's, like, enthusiasm with the movies I just mentioned in a weird... Even Apocalypse Now, it's like, oh, okay, cool, wow, that's cool. You know, this one is like, I just want the war to be over. When are they going to stop? Right. It's like, oh, no, the war's not over. They got to go... After Dunkirk, they got to go back and fight some more because their homeland's being targeted by the Nazis. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I thought it was very well. I liked the. I mean, it's the way history was, I imagine. But
yeah,
I thought I loved that they picked the part of the story where they, you know, the men are there fighting, and usually every war movie, the people who survive are the heroes. But the heroes were not the people. Were not the soldiers. Weren't the people who even survived. It was the people who went in who didn't need to do any of that.
Yeah,
it was the civilians who went in. And I thought they did that very well, because it snuck up on you at the end. Mm-hmm. You didn't realize, you didn't know who the hero of the film was until all the boats started pulling up,
yeah,
and pulling the men off the beach.
Yeah.
So, because that chaos was kind of like, I didn't know. I'm like, I understood that they kind of outlined that it would be small boats coming to mm-hmm. get them, and you know, whatever, whoever they could spare. But it sounded like it was going to be like three boats. I'm like, what's that going to do? I'm like, who gives a shit? How is this little fucking fishing trolley
this dumb dinghy
do anything about it? But then you saw like hundreds of them pull in, and that like it was like, oh, surprise! Here's the heroes of the film, mm-hmm. and kind of. I thought that was very well done.
Nolan did make the point, and I thought he made it well at the very end, where the English soldier read Churchill's speech.
Yes.
Saying that everybody's a hero, basically. You know, they survived. They held it. They're going to live to fight another day.
Yeah, we'll fight them everywhere.
Well, you know? That speech. I knew that speech because I'm a big Iron Maiden fan. And Iron Maiden would play that speech on their Power Slave tour before the concert started. They would play that legendary Churchill speech. It was his radio address. So, we shall go on in the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight in the fields and the ocean with growing confidence. So, I knew that. So, when the guy was reading it, I knew every line just because Iron Maiden taught me that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
On
their album Live After Death.
Are they they're an English band?
Yeah, Maiden's from Britain, yeah.
I should have known
that. But on their album Live After Death, before their first song, Ace is High. Now Ace is High is about dogfights in World War II. So before the live version of that song begins, they open their live show with Churchill's speech. And when I saw Maiden, I think it was 2008, 2009, they did like a replica of that tour. They opened with Churchill's speech and then Ace is High. So, and now Gary Oldman's going to play Churchill in a Churchill movie. So I'm sure that's going to be, that'll be, but like the beginning when the flyers were dropped and the Germans were telling them, this is you, this is us, we have you surrounded. Oh my God. Oh, that's so scary. And let us not forget, Jared, we are on an island right now. We are on Long Island. If anybody invades us, we are so fucked.
I'll be in Westchester.
You'll be in Westchester. we're in, and even Manhattan, that's an island too. We're surrounded by water. Oh, it's no escape. Oh, those stupid Nazis.
It's a good thing strategically. There's no reason to come after dipshits from Long Island.
Yeah. I mean, there's Indian Point.
Just kidding, everyone.
Yeah. oh my God, but great. That has to be Oscar. That has to be Oscar contender. Direction, maybe not acting because no performances really stood out, but score, cinematography.
There wasn't a single performance, but all of the performances together were the performance.
Exactly.
And that seemed to be the point.
Oh, so well done.
Yeah, very well done.
What year is this? This is 2017. This might be the movie of the year so far for me, but this is before Star Wars Episode 8 comes out. And Rogue One was December, so that doesn't count. So, yeah. So right now, I think Dunkirk is the movie of the year, until Star Wars, which I'll probably like better just by default. So, all right. Any final words, Jared?
No, that's it.
That's it. All right. Well, hopefully, I'm going to put spoiler alert while I describe in the description of the movie. So anybody hearing this better have seen the movie, or else you're spoiled. That'd be terrible. But you will be warned. And let me know what you think, Jared. You know, you don't have any website or anything to plug.
Not yet.
Not yet. If you listen to this in the future, maybe Jared Strack will have something. Anyway, yeah, so you can find me on Twitter, Mike Lane Act. That's Mike Lane ACT. On Facebook, facebook.com/MikeLaneActor. And you can email me at MikeLaneAct@yahoo.com. Please share these podcasts, comment, review, anything so I can be more visible, get more listeners, and hopefully make some money doing this. All right. Have a great night, great day, great afternoon, anything. And until next time, until the next podcast. Bye. And just a little addendum, because I just wanted to clear stuff up, which is great for having a podcast, because I get to do that. And the fact that it's not live, I get to add some things or take away some things. It's just, if I ever do a live podcast, oh my God. You know, because sometimes people say stuff and you want to clarify some things, or sometimes people say things defamatory or mentions people's last names, and it's just like, oh man, that's why the delay is there, at least in terrestrial radio. So anyway, let me get to my point. When I called a movie like Saving Private Ryan fun, I didn't necessarily mean I'm having a good time watching it. Fun was the wrong word. What I really meant to say was that it wasn't stressful watching Saving Private Ryan. It was harrowing. It was great filmmaking, and I was definitely on the edge of my seat because of the action and seeing the stress that the characters are going through. But with Dunkirk, it was a completely different experience, in that during the whole movie, I just felt so stressed out. Like, Jared looked at me and saw me watching it, like my hands were clutched, I was making fists, I was literally hanging on to something invisible, but I was hanging on because Nolan was able to convey the stress of war so well, in probably better than any war movie I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot, and I've seen a lot of great ones, and man, you know, thinking of Saving Private Ryan, Spielberg did that definitely in the beginning of it with D-Day, showing the soldiers on the boat. So imagine watching that scene in Saving Private Ryan with the soldiers on the boat going to Normandy, and then just multiply that by the whole movie. At least there were parts in Saving Private Ryan where you were able to breathe. In Dunkirk, you were not able to breathe throughout the whole movie. It just, like the very beginning, it showed soldiers walking through an abandoned neighborhood trying to get some water. But actually, like, maybe that lasted 5 seconds because you saw the stupid leaflets falling. So no, let me take that back. The whole movie was one big ball of stress. And watching movies like this, watching war movies like this, makes me so glad. Well, one, for the bravery of the people in the military, because that is just another level of bravery, you know. And they might be scared too, but they're pushing through that fear, because you know it's just, you know, it's a great chance they can die. So there's that, and then there's also the fact that I can live through this stress very much vicariously. But I know I'm going to survive at the end. So at the end of Dunkirk, and at the end of any scary movie, at the end of any intense movie, at least for me, there's a moment of calm. Like, I made it through. I defeated the monster. I psychologically did it. So I think that's one of the reasons why people like books and people like stories and people like movies, because it takes you on that journey vicariously, especially stressful situations. It does that vicariously. Now, you know, in happy situations, you don't want to do that vicariously. You know, you don't want to have a romantic relationship vicariously. You know, you don't want to, I don't know, go on a roller coaster vicariously. You don't want to travel to Europe or travel anywhere vicariously. You want to do that. But in stressful, harmful situations, I really think movies help us in that way. I don't have any evidence or studies. I'm sure there's a bunch of studies and whatnot, but I'm just talking from my personal experience, anecdotes. And as we know, or maybe you don't, then anecdotes aren't the best way to prove, but that's the feeling I have. So anyway, there we go. All right, talk to you all later. Bye.